People just call it rep grid for short. Okay. All right. Feminist. You're done. Thank you, Marty.
Sorry if I read, as it took me a long time to wrap my head around the marks. So I'm just going to read it. Then stop me at any point if you have questions. Feminist research methods and qualitative research. In order to better understand the feminist research methods and qualitative research, one must first understand the historic roots of feminist theory and hear a review of the Marxist principle of the mode of production as it relates to the academic production process is important. From the Marxist perspective, the mode of production in relation to the capitalist economy consists of the interplay between the relations and forces of production. The relation is who controls or can control the final product and who cannot. And the forces are the objects or tools worked on in the production process. First, we break the relations of production down to a much simpler question. What is the final product and who may know it? Essentially, who is the knower? The answer to this question is quite profound, for if we accept that the final product or knowledge in the realm of economic production is produced by a system which historically has been male-orientated or male-dominant, how accessible is this knowledge to women? Think of this in the realm of dualism, with the simple dichotomy of man-other, being the subject, having access to a new piece of knowledge or scholarship, being the object. Where would a woman situate herself in this dichotomy? And more important, what lens would she therefore have to interpret this knowledge through? Very beautiful, no?
I'm getting there, yeah. I'm not very familiar with feminist theory, so...
Yeah. Well, neither was I. Remember,
there isn't one feminist theory.
Yes.
It's kind of like Freud. There isn't one Freudian theory. Okay. We lumped it all together, unfortunately.
Okay. Within this dichotomy lies an important element for early feminist researchers, the subject-object-power relationship, which, within a traditionally patriarchal capitalist system, is imbued with gender bias. The subject, for the most part, becomes a male, or subject takes on a male perspective, and that perceives the object, which is generally female, or takes on a feminine role. The forces of production, therefore, constitute the tools, methods, data analysis being utilized to create this knowledge, and can then be argued to be extensions of the gender biases of the subject-object relationship. Stanley refers to the product, and this is Liz Stanley from her book, Feminist Praxis. Stanley refers to the product of this type of production, knowledge, as being alienated knowledge, a product apparently complete, bearing no apparent trace of the conditions of its production and the social relations that gave rise to it. To this, this is a fairly important concept of all knowledge, therefore, from a feminist perspective, being alienated in that it's published in such a way that, well, it's not, there are no biases here, even though it's simply not acknowledging that there are biases, and it's that search for biases that's important. Taking this critique forward from its Marxist roots, the purpose of feminist research methods is therefore to present unalienated knowledge. Whether or not unalienated knowledge is possible remains a topic for debate, but for the use of any method, knowledge will be presented as in some form which has been analyzed and manipulated in some way. Sandra Harding, who Liz Stanley and Sue Wise refer to quite often in the first couple chapters, presents three epistemological perspectives which have developed in feminist research. One is the feminist empiricist, which sees the problem as lying in the notion of bad science. Science, from its positivist perspective, is inherently imbued with gender bias. Two, the feminist standpoint approach, which privileges the perspective of women in revealing masculine bias in science. So by situating yourself in the category of other, of that being the non-dominant in the power relationship, you can therefore interrogate all the different mechanisms and systems that have been put in place. And three, the postmodern approach, which disputes basic scientific assumptions about objectivity and truth. Empiricist and standpoint feminist research are termed as successor sciences, as they both specify feminist knowledge as better or truer because they are derived from outsiders who can't see the relationships of domination and suppression for what they truly and objectively are. The postmodern approach rejects this notion of universals and sees knowledge as relative to experience and the other which women occupy in the man-other dichotomy is fractured in this sense, which means the feminist standpoint, going back to the second perspective, is expanded to the feminist standpoints. It's not just one feminist outlook. There are quite a few. I was reading up on the notion of black feminism as well as lesbian feminism, which is fascinating. Because I was able to apply that on this morning as I was on my way somewhere listening to the radio, the notion of how masculinity is something that cannot be escaped in the same way as femininity cannot be escaped by women. Masculinity cannot be escaped by men, even in the way products are sold. And I noticed this on the radio, but I'll go back to that. So, what are feminist research methods or methodologies? Something I personally struggle with, for though I have a better understanding of different perspectives of feminist research, exact methods seem to be quite similar to the established methods in different perspectives. However, the way these methods are applied and then the data analyzed, there seems to be one major underlying theme which feminist research practice should never lose sight of: women as actively constructing as well as interpreting their social processes and social relations which constitute their everyday realities. Here, the autobiography plays an important role in understanding the realities a particular woman, and thereby perhaps a greater number of women, construct. However, the autobiography, or just biography, can be constructed out of more than just a qualitative interview or narrative data. Biography, essentially, can be constructed out of surveys, questionnaires, photography, etc. As long as you always keep to that one notion of women are the ones who are actively constructing their own reality, and that's what the search is for.
Okay.
Did I miss the point?
No, I don't think so. I think that last point is extremely important. Is that one of the things that I think the majority of feminist researchers would agree on is that the research does have real-world application to empower those for which it's being focused upon. And that isn't always the case, as we know, with all research. So it should be an empowering notion.
Just a quick comment. I mean, yesterday I was reviewing a paper on ecofeminism.
Okay.
So I was thinking, like, we have some pretty strange feminists in this room. Yeah.
And then sometimes I wonder just how, you know, you look at some of the advertisements that that still exist on television and media, and you still wonder, you know, where the heck is feminism? You know, has it really become so institutionalized now that it is removed from popular culture and therefore not only working in its own circles? You know, that's a very worrying thing to me.
Well, it's really interesting that in Stanley, Liz Stanley, in the early 70s when she started writing on this topic, one of her tenets of the feminist perspective should be that it should never be codified in such a way that it becomes a text and a textual reference that is referred back to as being, this is seminal and this is what needs to be understood. It should be ever-changing and reflective based upon a woman's experience. And that seems to have been lost in most perspectives, other than perhaps the postmodern, which the postmodern is very difficult because
then you lose the woman altogether. Yeah. That's the other problem with the postmodern. You lose the whole notion of being a woman in the first place, and therefore it loses that sense of how it's focused on difference. And it is really problematic. And yet it's such a fascinating area. I think the idea of it being fluid and changeable, and also not amenable to the kinds of methods that we have available for studying phenomena like that. You know, we still, for those that have had to stick their neck out and write things down, they become the very artifacts and objects. You know, they become text, if you like, in our world and our culture. So, it's been fascinating areas of accusations and the wild stuff that's come about. If I had to say for me, a personal thing about where I stand with feminist research, is that I think that it's been the most important research area that in making more transparent that which has been so opaque in our world, and so in other words, raising awareness has been for me the key thing they've been able to do more than any other research area, which is still hiding behind lots of agendas. And I'm not saying feminist research doesn't have agendas too, but they are very obvious agendas. They're so obvious that they actually enable you to take on board what the messages are and start to, you know, raise awareness of all these other possibilities. They raise more questions than they answer in a lot of the methods and approaches used. But that's what personally for me I like, is that they have at least done that. They've caused perturbation, stirring up where before things would have just gone on, taken for granted. Okay? I mean, we need that, right? We need people who are able to stir things up. But again, in doing just that for a particular cause or for a particular focus being on the side of women, it runs into all kinds of other problems, some of which you did outline, and others are still there too.
Well, the thing I found that was interesting was it seemed as though the field of sociology was the one that was least receptive to feminist theory, which I thought was really odd, simply because of understanding groups without understanding the role of a woman within a group, or without accepting that a woman is different than a man in a group and a group dynamic. I thought that was really interesting, and only from what I found, only in the late 80s, early 90s did sociology seem to start coming around and start applying research, feminist research methods into its own practice. But I couldn't figure out, I couldn't find out why it was so difficult for a lot of sociologists to accept it.
Some of the more recent research that I was reading was that feminist theory has sort of grown out of just thinking about women and is actually starting to talk about changing the values in society. And one of the things that keeps coming up is the fact that society today is production and consumption society. And what modern feminist research is trying to do is change the values to what they call a more sharing and caring approach, or a more what they call an ecocentric approach, rather than, I mean, the word they use was...
An ecocentric.
Yeah.
shifting from the
it was actually anthropocentric approach, which they identify, which is like human beings are the most superior of all creations, and everything else on earth is there to serve them. And that is the idea they're trying to change now. So that's
I think a lot of traditional sociologists, coming back to your point, would have seen focus on women as a group in their own right as the realm much more for psychology. Right? They would have said, well, if you're not comparing women to something else, then you're not looking at sociology as we would try to be perceiving it. You're just looking at one group, and maybe you're in the realm more of psychology. And similarly, psychologists then looking at feminist issues were very much trapped in looking at how women were different from men. So in other words, the whole thing was the backlash approach, which comes up with any new movement, right? So how are women not men like men, and how are we different, and how do we have our own thing? And of course that came under a lot of criticism too, because it was taking, again, women out of the real world.
Right.
You know, just isolating them even more by saying what they're not.
Well, one thing that I found quite common was the notion that feminist research looks at the notion of oppression and therefore women's stories of that oppression. But it seems to categorize, at least early on, and even I think the way we're using the term right now, one woman's oppression as being all women's oppression, which is not true, especially if you move from a Western culture to an Eastern culture, different economics, different levels of education. And that's why I find this the different standpoints now that are emerging really interesting. And
okay, I've got an example to give you for that. Another researcher who was at Keele University with me, her PhD was based on looking at a novel called, I can't remember the novel's name now. It was Sylvia Fraser was writing about her experiences of childhood sexual abuse. And so here's a psychologist, and here's her PhD. Again, another unique one. She's got this book, and it's this autobiography of Sylvia Fraser. And what she was looking at was that when Sylvia attempted to frame her story, if you like, about what happened to her, her father was abusing her as a child, within a feminist frame, there was a almost that sense again of the death of the subject. It was almost as if it was all removed from Sylvia's experience and became about the oppression and the whole notion of patriarchal society and all of that. It just didn't seem to be the story of Sylvia anymore that one was telling. And since that wasn't helping her tell her story, if you like, it wasn't giving her a sense of telling a personal account of what was my experience, not telling an account of what all women know to be what this is about. Her frame shifted to a much more therapeutic notion of frame, if you like. So more, not the medical model, but more therapy model of framing this experience, which is one where it's very much placed on recovery, okay, and it got a little bit into the idea of recovered memory, but really it was about a recovery for this individual. So her whole experience was now framed within an empowering that this is how I've now recovered and told my story, okay. So that's different from a power notion of here's what men have dominated women and my abuse stems from all of that, okay. That for her was not going to help her tell this personal narrative. So getting back to what you're saying, I think that these things do frame the way in which we'll look at a piece of research, a piece of text, the world, even our own accounts. And it wasn't necessarily, a lot of feminist research was falling into the postmodern realm of losing the subject, okay? Losing the real person, if you like. And that's why a lot of people have pulled back now. And moved more into what they're considering to be a middle position between phenomenology and a postmodernist account, saying that if all knowledge now becomes fragmented and relative, then why is it that, you know, I have a strong sense as a person of continuity in my life? It goes against my perception of how I'm experiencing the world. And also it means that we're losing those first-person accounts of people and no longer taking them as meaningful in their own right. And yet they obviously have meaning because people do believe them and do act on them. Okay. Doesn't mean that it's true that they don't serve, they aren't fragmented if you look at them. That's all going on, and there are other questions to see and ask within it. But it tries to bring a middle position. Right? And that's very, very hard to do, but we'll see if we can get at some of that in our analyses. So that's where even feminist researchers who have gone that what we're calling the more radical feminist researchers, they're looking to more and more for a middle ground. In fact, that's what I really liked about this. She was Michelle Davies when I knew her, but she's Michelle Crossley now, and her books and her writing now in the area of health, and she did a lot of work with HIV patients, and she's looked at trauma, and she wrote a book about narrative. I think I might have brought the book along to show you. A really good book that looks at these ideas, narrative psychology, self, trauma, and the construction of meaning. And she talks really about this personal journey where she herself couldn't reconcile being a feminist with this idea about the phenomenology, the side of what she was doing. And of course, she and Jonathan Smith are friends, but they've taken different takes now on this middle position. Complicated, but fascinating. And she does have a chapter, and if you're interested, that talks about her early book, Surviving Sylvia, and how she she tried to do this kind of work. Okay, anything else? I'm just going to hand it's a very hard topic. For you to have done it in like 3 pages is really amazing, because it's a huge area.
Well, the first chapter covers Marx in feminist praxis. The second chapter covers, supposedly in the title of the chapter, it's Wise as well as Stanley, methods, methodology, and epistemology, even though I think there's 2 paragraphs in the entire chapter. It's more just a lit review, a massive one. But that's where I came across Sandra Harding. And then the rest of the book is broken up into essentially case studies of people from, I think it's the University of Manchester, writing about their experiences of trying to apply feminist theory. So there isn't really much in that particular book about these are the methods. It's more just you have to adopt this perspective. It's the question you have to always keep at the center.
Good for you. And that is the bottom line, that there isn't a method that's feminist, right? You can draw on any method, but it's the perspective.
So because of its focus on oppression, is it considered a form of critical theory then, or critical ethnography? Or like, is it in perhaps?
For the most part, yeah, definitely. I think it falls into that camp.
Oddly though, they don't refer to it as, in feminist praxis, I remember in the first 2 chapters at least, the ones I read in most depth, they only refer to feminist research and in regard to critical theory when in looking at its Marxist roots.
Yeah.
After that,
most structuralist notions, it would be. And then they try to move on from there, right?
Okay. I have a question. I mean, feminist research actually encompasses a number of theories, not just one, different branches of it. Most of the feminist research is kind of based on Marx's work or uses that ideology. I was wondering if there's some branch which is more free trade oriented.
More what oriented?
Free trade oriented.
Free trade.
Yeah.
Capitalist feminism, that kind of thing?
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, I've heard of socialist feminism sometimes.
Okay.
Something like that.
What it initially tried to do is it tried to equate the notion of capitalist economy and that of consumption and production, consumption, and essentially the materialistic elements there to the academic process. Because feminist theory came out of feminist critiques in literature as well as other social sciences, and that then carried forward into an actual research method, if you can call it that.
That's very, again, the point is so important here, because although I said it raises a lot of awareness and it was empowering, it is bottom line political. And there's no getting away from that. You could, again, feminists do argue that all research is within the political realm, that you can't escape it anywhere. But it's more, I guess that's what I was saying before, at least that agenda is obvious, you know, which is what I like about it, rather than more covert political agendas going on.
I had a question, sorry. I refer to it in there, I think I quoted it, but in feminist research, in opening itself up to the postmodern epistemology, it enables, I think it was called, notion of the fractured other, and therefore feminist research standpoints, like rather than just the one standpoint, it accepts that there are other standpoints, but only in moving to postmodernism do you accept that there's more than one feminist standpoint. And there's a black, lesbian, post-colonial, and so forth. Is that what you mean when you say people are pulling back? And are they pulling back to a middle ground, or are they pulling back to the notion of there being multiple standpoints?
No, pulling back from the idea that when you ultimately get to there and everything becomes relativist, and you say, okay, well, if there are competing interpretations of the truth, how do I then choose? Then they end up in the very hole that they wouldn't have wanted to be in, which is saying, well, how can we have any confidence then that your feminist perspective is any more true than any other perspective out there? So that's a bit what I mean by they actually lose the sense of what womanhood is, and it just becomes something that's literally a free-for-all if you want to take that approach, and not something that's going to carry that political agenda anymore, is it? It's not going to carry the same weight. So that's what I mean by a pulling back. People got to the point where there was complete death of the subject in this area of work and said, well, you know, we can't go any farther, and it doesn't, and this goes against what we're feeling is important in the real sense of the word, in our and the fabric of society and how we're functioning, this doesn't feel right, this sense of analysis that they got to.
I remember too, studying it from the postmodern slant, it was basically you had your feminist umbrella and you sort of had to fit yourself under an umbrella. And it's kind of that, again, that sort of goes against the whole idea of feminism in the first place. Feminism in the first place is that you want to be yourself, and, you know, of course, womanhood is, I don't like feminism, but, you know, womanhood is going to be part of your identity, but it should be up to you to choose what part of your identity is going to be. It shouldn't be an exercise in picking which, you know, which camp you want to side with. So it becomes a more individualist pursuit rather than a female pursuit, which I'm all for.
That's right, and that's getting that's that middle position. You've got the individual and the socially constructed, and you've got to find, you can't, you know, a middle position if you want to bring those two worlds together.
I had a great example, if people are still trying to wrap their heads around it. Go back to Spinelli chapter 2, and the example he writes about walking through the forest and the wind and the noise, and simply ask, if that's a man asking those questions, in what way would someone, like, if a man is asking those questions walking down and wondering about the noise and things like that, what isn't being talked about? And there it becomes the notion of assault and the sexualization of assault. If you throw those two characteristics in, the entire situation changes because a new hierarchy is created of where the fear is being created.
Yeah. I read it that way, actually.
Pardon?
I read it that way. I thought it was a woman writing, so.
Yeah.
Anyway,
that's a lovely example. Thank you.
Roughly what time did the feminist research actually start coming out?
In a big way? Again, the 60s. So yeah, the big backlash. Did you find?
Angela Davis, 1968. She was a student of Marcuse. Mm-hmm. She started writing about black feminist theory and a rejection of... So feminist theory began in the mid-60s, and then that was the first major critique of these are the problems with it. I only know this because I saw a movie about her.
Okay. Yeah. No, okay.
Really got into that.
I wouldn't have picked that as the center starting point. I think there are other people that will claim that they started it. But certainly in Britain they have a different place from which they believe they started the feminist ideas. But yeah. Good. Okay. Thank you. Good work again, as always. And we don't know everything yet, but we got a taste, right?
Where would you have picked it from, originating?
Where
would you have picked it from, originating?
Oh, crikey. Actually, a lot of people say that it started off more in popular culture, with women writing about their sexuality and started there, like Germaine Greer and people writing then. And then went into a more academicized or institutionalized notion of what feminism would be. But it started in popular culture first.
What about back in the, early part of the century when women were fighting for women's rights? Can that be claimed to be some kind of start? Or is that too, is that something else?
But would it be the act or the analysis of?
Yeah, exactly.
Because... Mm-hmm. If you're just writing about, you can go back to somebody like Afra Banner around 1600, or Jane Austen, as writing about the woman's experience, so the woman's perspective.
Right.
But until there's some type of
critical movement, yeah. And the reason I picked Germaine Greer is that she was doing that, but in popular culture. Right. So starting to question critically. As opposed to just a kind of, you know, equality or equal rights issue, making it. Okay. Good. All right, so as we can see, we got a good start to a list, and there's many, many, many possibilities you'll run into, and we've got one that's up now, so we'll add to it on the website now that we've got that. And we should come up with a pretty interesting list of possible approaches. Too many. It's funny how some come in and out of fashion, though, isn't it? And some popular for their little brief moment. You don't hear from them anymore.